tell me what you were thinking that you'd like to accomplish in the 30 to 35 minutes we have here. Anybody, quickly. Okay, we'll talk about that. Anyone else? Yes?
I would like to decipher how, like, HR works, because it seems to me like the...
So would I. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Like, this is the main obstacle. I mean, sometimes I know I have what it takes for this job, but I cannot pass this block because of HR.
So you see HR as an obstacle?
I don't have a lot of experience there, but it seems like...
Oh, come on. Go ahead and say it. A lot of people do. I worked in HR. HR can be a huge obstacle. Not always, but in many cases it can be. We'll talk a little bit about that. Because there are... We don't have any HR people in the room. I mean, I have to work with HR people. I used to be one, but I've taken the cure. There are ways to deal with that. We'll talk about... We will talk about that. Just remind me. Other ideas. Yes, sir.
I guess, how do you get your foot in the door? You always hear about, oh, networking. And hopefully, I'm hoping to find a career that's a little bit off of what I'm doing now in my graduate school research, and also in a location that's not Tennessee. It's no offense to Tennessee. So in that respect, I'm...
You mean you want to do missions work somewhere else?
Not quite that, but... yeah, so I'm in an area that I don't get much exposure to, you know, places where I want to be. My field of expertise is not exactly where I want to pursue my career. So networking is very limited. So you always hear about the importance of networking. What happens when you don't have the foot in the door? How do you get in?
Okay, we'll talk about that. Anyone else? As I go through, this is very interactive. If you have a question, speak it out. If you want to disagree, feel free to do so. You know, I am... Most of what I talk about is my opinion based on my experience, and I learn something new every day. In fact, I learned quite a bit yesterday, but we won't go into that because it was painful. I have a very interesting background. I have a degree in engineering physics. I don't have any bio background, but I understand physics pretty well. And then I moved over into the humanistic side of the world. Most HR people who meet me say, how did you go from getting a degree in physics to working in the HR field? There's a story behind it, but we don't have time for it today. Search, leadership development. I've had the chance to do leadership development not only in this country, but also in the Middle East, having seven or eight different nationalities in the classroom. It was very eye-opening. And then I am a Vandy grad, went to school at Peabody. I have a son that just graduated from HOD. Actually had two job offers 2 weeks ago, and he just started his first job a week ago, so very happy about that. Excuse me? Human and organizational development. So I have two sons and a wife, a great wife. My oldest son, the Vandy son, got the HR side. My younger son at Auburn University has the technical side. So they kind of split me up. So what we're going to talk about today, this is kind of the framework of which we're going to attach your questions, is how businesses find talent. And I have them in the order from least effective to most effective, because if you want to know what businesses are looking for, you need to understand how to best connect to them. So the direct application. Before I do that, we're going to do something very quickly. I need your name and your degree program, what you're pursuing, but we're going to be quick, starting right here.
I'm Allison in cancer biology.
Steve Vogt, chemical engineering.
Ashley Brady, PhD in pharmacology.
Lauren Matisse, PhD, cancer biology.
Catherine Dew, hearing and speech sciences.
Ashley, I'm in the ITP.
Lewis Kraft, chemical
and
physical
biology.
Jewel,
pharmacology.
Ellie
Doyle,
medical
doctor.
Martin
Schmidt,
neuroscience.
Jen
Dew, chemical engineering.
Amanda Furtado, chemical engineering.
Charvon Bailey, cancer biology.
Scott Miller, molecular physiology.
Kurt Watson, cancer biology.
Laura Sathan, analytical chemistry.
Dan Berry, microbiology.
Glenn Koppel, biomedical informatics.
Anthony Clark, pathology.
Jenny Weeks, infectious diseases.
Sean Carmody, cell biology.
Amanda Lowry, radiation oncology.
Elad, cancer
biology. Ellen Riley, biochemistry.
Ron Hopkins,
biology.
Physical
Biomedical informatics, graduate, doc, or postdoctoral?
Postdoctoral.
Do you know Laurie Novak?
Yes.
It's my sister-in-law. It's a small world. There's always a connection. Anyway. So direct application. Who here has applied for a job online before? Just raise your hand. How many of you have ever gotten a job from just blindly applying to a job online? Okay. The odds are that's usually just not going to happen, if that's the only thing you do. Now, I can show you statistics. I don't have the stats today, but usually if it's just the direct app, 10% or less. Campus visitation we'll talk about. We'll talk about using social networks. How many of you are LinkedIn users? Raise your hand. How many of you are not LinkedIn users? Raise your hand. Hopefully, by the time we leave here, I'll have at least made enough of a case for you to find a compelling reason to do that. Because if you're not using a social network and you're not using LinkedIn, you are not taking advantage of one of the best tools you can use. We could talk about that for hours, but we don't have time. Conferences and trade shows. There are many useful ways to use them. Our earlier speaker gave a couple of them. I'll talk about a few more. And then referrals. Referrals are the best way to find a foot into the door. This is exactly what you're talking about. Your question is, where are you going to get started, right?
Yeah.
We'll talk about that. Social networks can be one of those ways. So, I don't know what game that was. It's not a Vanderbilt game because there are way too many people. And they're not wearing ties. It's not an Auburn game because they're not wearing ties and there's not near enough orange. But if you are a direct applicant, you're like one person in that crowd. And the odds of you being singled out and found are very limited. It's impersonal. You're just not going to find work. And I do a lot of work with people in career transition. Every Monday night, I work with a group down in Brentwood, Tennessee, and people of all levels, C-level down to entry level. And it's amazing. Anyone here know the definition of insanity? This is exactly right. If you continue to apply over and over and don't get a different result, you know, finding a job can create insanity. Or is it the other way around? I'm not sure. But if you think this is the best way, you're going to be sadly disappointed. Another way, which kind of moves a little bit up the food chain, is to get to know organizations better, either through work they do on campus or visitation. When I worked in the engineering world, I used to do a lot of campus visitation work, and I used to recruit engineers. In fact, I'm really very thankful. I feel very comfortable with all the engineers in the room. My engineering physics background is more electrical, but I've done work with chemies before. Organizations that come on campus usually have a much better idea. You can find out more about what they're looking for by talking with them. But the issue with campus visitation is that, especially in a down economy, organizations are not here nearly as much as they used to be. So that's not going to be a great way to be found. Social networks. A social network can be a great catalyst. I'm in a room of science people. Somebody tell me what a catalyst is.
Quickens the kinetics.
So a catalyst enters into some type of a reaction and improves the end result or speeds up the result, correct?
Yeah.
I had 10 hours of chemistry. A social network does just the same thing. So for example, you're wanting to find out how to find a foot in the door. How many of you have read the book, Seven Habits of Highly Effective People? Do you remember the phrase, begin with the end in mind?
Yes.
Okay. One of the seven habits is begin with the end in mind. So you have an end in mind. What's your end?
Oh.
Where would you like to end up?
As in like location or like job? I want to find a...
Just one, quickly.
Government job.
Government job?
Yeah.
Okay. A social network is one way to get started. You could go, do you have a LinkedIn profile?
Yeah.
Okay. How many connections do you have?
I haven't checked in a while. I just keep...
That's not a good sign.
I took my quick update LinkedIn profile.
All right. The best thing you can do on LinkedIn is to send me a connection because I have 14,000 direct connections and my network spans about 19 million people right now. So if you send me an invitation, you're going to pick up about 3 million up to third level immediately, and I'm glad to share my network with you. The whole point is this: using a social network, you can search for someone in an area doing what you want and actually have a path to find them. You can also use a number of other tools such as Google to do that, but LinkedIn is the most obvious way. Facebook is nice, but it's not nearly as productive in this area. I'll just leave it at that. But again, a social network, at the end of the day, is going to provide an opportunity for you to have a one-on-one conversation with somebody who may have the ability to help you. A social network is not an end-all, be-all. It is just a tool to help you achieve your destination. So if you try to rely too much on social technology because you don't want to talk to people, you're going to be sadly disappointed. Questions about that?
If you have 14,000 connections, I mean, isn't that back to like the stadium full of fans, it's a huge sea of people? I mean, isn't it like almost getting to be worthless when there's like so many people on there? You
know? Not really, because if you look at it from the standpoint of interconnectivity, it's like a spider web. And if I were at the center of that web, I go out and my span and my reach is very broad. But it's not just for me. It's for many other people who happen to be here or here. If you're here and this gentleman's over here and he wants to know you, he can come through me to do that. And I'm always a willing conduit to help people do that. So I understand. I just happen to be kind of like the Costco when it comes to social networking, because I have a lot of different SKUs, a lot of different connections available. And that helps me because, remember, what do I do for a living? I'm a recruiter. So my value to people is who I can reach, and I don't necessarily reach all of them. It's just I have the ability to do so. And it gets back to the other basic networking tenet. You're not always asking. You got to give a lot sometimes before you're ever going to get. I could tell you story after story of where I've offered to help somebody and done so, and it's come back to me in multiples of what I've ever given. Does that help?
So the amount of time that you have to spend fielding requests and what, I don't know, I haven't got a LinkedIn profile, so I don't know how it works exactly. But I'm just wondering about the time investment you put forth. I mean, you sort of just answered that it...
Well, I mean, it's very asynchronous because I do it as I get time to do it. So there may be some days when I don't spend any time there, and there would be other days I spend an hour or two. But it's just like...
But it pays off. For you.
Obviously. I couldn't tell you how much it pays off for me. Oh, I can't think of the scientific word. It's one of Newton's three laws. Anyway, I'll come back to that. Again, a social network, just like anything else, overused is ineffective, underused is ineffective also. We're talking about many different ways that businesses find people. Businesses use social networks more and more every day. There are people who think that social networks will replace recruiters. People who think that don't understand what recruiters really do. It's a great sourcing tool. It's not a recruiting tool. Any questions before I move on? Conferences and trade shows. This event is a classic example of how you can better be found in order to find a job. I thought the speaker this morning gave some great examples, but there were two that she didn't mention. What she didn't mention was, whenever I'm going to a conference or a trade show and there's a speaker I want to get to know, I'm going to look them up on LinkedIn and send them an invitation before the conference. One of the questions I wanted to ask her, which I didn't because I had to leave early, was if she had ever gotten my LinkedIn invitation, because I saw Brianna was speaking. I sent her an invitation 3 days ago. And by doing that, what it does is it lets that person know, one, I'm paying attention to the fact you're going to be there. Two, I think enough of the value you're bringing that I'd like to talk to you now and in the future. The other thing I do, and I've done this, I did it in May, is if you want to get to know people at a deeper level at a conference or a trade show, be part of the volunteer group that's there. Back in May, I attended a conference at the Georgia World Congress Center in downtown Atlanta. And I didn't want to pay, but I also wanted to get to know some people better, so I volunteered. So as a volunteer, I got to know all the other core volunteers who worked in that core industry where I do business. Plus, I had a distinctive shirt that everybody there in the show noticed. And people would come and ask me questions. So I didn't have to always be the one who was going to initiate the conversation. I don't mind that anyway. But if you're a volunteer at an event, people will come to you. Many of them will be the people you want to talk to. Does that make sense? So just don't show up. You need to think about if you're going to go to a conference or a trade show, who's going to be there? Who do I want to talk to? You need to lay the groundwork ahead of time. Excuse me. Referrals. The number one way to be found, the number one way to be effective in the world of work. And this is not just for finding a job. It's for gaining business. It's for anything you want to do when it comes to the world of work. It takes a lot of time and thought. And the other thing is, you're thinking about getting a job now. Even after you get into the world of work, your networking must never stop. Remember I talked earlier that I work with career transition? Many of the people that I work with every Monday night had never been active networkers because they were too busy doing their jobs. And as a result, when they got out of work, they had no network to rely upon, so they had to start from scratch. I've been involved in a number of other activities. I'm a compulsive volunteer, so I have so many different networks I can draw on that it helps me, but it also helps me help other people. And again, that's the value I provide and what I do as a recruiter. You need to be thinking about, from a referral standpoint, where is it you want to go, and can I get there in one step? Does it take two steps? And how do I navigate that path? The Ferrazzi book, Never Eat Alone. I'm sorry, it's not that one. How many of you have read the book, The Tipping Point, or ever heard of it? If you have not, check it out, buy it on paperback, get it on whatever you want. The book, The Tipping Point, by Malcolm Gladwell, talks about people, and you've seen this, there are people you know who just know a lot of people. So if, I want to pick on you. What was your first name?
Amanda.
Amanda. You have friends who know a lot of people, don't you? I mean, it's just intuitively, if you wanted to know something, you have certain people you go to, right? Gladwell calls those people connectors or mavens. Each one of you need to think about who is it that you know that has that ability. You also need to think about what are the different components of my life where I have networks. You may be, you know, you may have research friends, you may belong to a volunteer organization, you may go to a church, you may belong. How many of you, anyone here ever get involved with scouting when they were younger? Do you have contacts in scouting still?
No, I quit when I was in seventh grade.
Okay. Both of my sons went through scouting and got to the rank of Eagle. I have a number of good contacts in Middle Tennessee because I was a scouting volunteer. So your networks can come from many different areas, and just because the network was a volunteer network, it can actually lead to a number of job opportunities. Does that make sense? So, the first group talked about how to keep from getting weeded out as you're going through the process. So here's one of the most important things. Can anyone tell me what that picture is over there? It's a nativity scene, but what's the building they're in?
Stall.
Not a stall.
Manger.
Manger. All right. How do you spell the word manger? M-A-N-G-E-R, right? How do you spell the word manager?
M-A-N-A-G-E-R.
I cannot tell you how many resumes I've seen in my life where somebody is a manger and not a manager. And you're all smiling. How many of you use spell check to check your resume? We all do. Is manger a word that's going to be accepted?
Yep.
The whole point is this. The fundamentals, the blocking and tackling, the proper word usage, the appropriate spelling, all make a difference. I use the manger picture because I think the picture helps to crystallize. That's one of the very, very basic words, and I see it misused all the time because people don't check their work. And that is a differentiating factor between being in the funnel here and making it to the funnel here. You'll never get to the interview stage if your paperwork isn't pristine, unless you just have a concrete referral. You've got to be dressed appropriately. And you can be overdressed as well as underdressed. You need to know what the organization's looking for. The other thing is, I mean, you're going to go through the interview process. You know, we talked about the handshake earlier. Basic courtesy is important. But the other very fundamental issue is, after every informational discussion, informational interview, formal interview, the handwritten note thanking somebody can be a huge differentiating factor. And not only would I encourage you to send a handwritten note within a day or two, I would encourage you to thank them by email the same day, then follow up with the handwritten note. No. This is one man's opinion.
Even in a tech,
at the end of the day, the human interaction still, I'm just a huge advocate of the handwritten note. And I have two people who have really influenced me very heavily in this area. One is my wife. My wife is the queen of the note. And not only has she influenced me, but both of our sons have their own stationery as a result of her persistence. But the second was the guy I worked for when I worked for the YMCA. He was the CEO of the YMCA. Now he's the CEO of the YMCA of Houston. $110 million organization. So not a small potatoes group. He had a list. It was always a constantly evolving list of people he needed to thank. Every morning, the first thing he would do at work, he would write 5 handwritten notes. You cannot underestimate the power of the handwritten note. So if you want to differentiate yourself from other candidates, the handwritten note, now I have to admit, I print mine because my writing is not decipherable. But the note makes a difference. Yes?
Anywhere from the CEO to the people that would be working under you, do you send everyone you met with all day?
I would send, you know, you've got to use some discretion. You want to make sure the decision makers get the notes.
Okay.
So, but I mean, if you talk to the CEO, chief operations officer, the CFO, even the HR people, because the HR people can help you as well as block you. We're going to talk about that more in a minute. That didn't come up the first time. Anyone else have a question? Yes, sir.
So you're actually saying write this out in longhand rather than print?
I'm talking about taking either a blank note, taking a blank note card and actually writing it out.
Something through the U.S. Postal Service, though.
I mean, you have to use snail mail, and I know that's a problem. I mean, I'm the son of a postal worker, but, you know, it makes a difference. Because we live in a world that is very impersonal, and anything you can do to personalize it, anything you can do to make yourself more memorable is to your advantage. Okay. All of you, your initial roles probably will be because of your science strengths. But your ability to advance will be because of your interpersonal strengths. So it's sort of like lifting weights. Anyone here ever do any weightlifting? All right. If you're only lifting with your right arm, that's like only improving your science skills. If you're only lifting with your left arm, it might be like your personal skills. You need to work on both. Obviously, you're going to keep abreast of your technology through classes, conferences, reading, you're going to have to practice your interpersonal skills also. You know, some of you may have gotten a chance to do some of that here. You may need to go to coursework, leadership development, opportunities that will help you improve your ability to communicate, interact better with others. It may be like going to the dentist, which for most of you, you probably don't like. But, you know, if you're going to get better at something and it's a skill, you have to practice it in order to get better. You've got to have both sides in order to be successful. Moving ahead, great credentials are important. You also need to be involved. Being a volunteer in organizations is a way to get better known. Only spending time in the classroom is just not enough. You've got to be a compulsive networker. I'll go back to my son who just graduated. The reason he ended up getting two job offers and getting a job when he did was because he had great experience while he was going to school. He has a degree in HOD, Human and Organizational Development, and he has an entry-level HR job. While he was in school, he worked in recruiting for HCA, and he also did his HOD internship for Cat Financial in comp and benefits. Then he also worked for the Nashville Career Center last summer. So he had a very wide background in human resources related activities. Anything you can do that will give you experience related to your coursework is only going to benefit you. Now, I know that assistantships are probably similar to that, but if you can even get involved in working for an organization on a part-time basis while you're going to graduate school or if you're in your postdoc, anything that is experience related is going to be a tipping point to help you in achieving the next job you want. Other questions? I thought I saw a hand. HR. HR usually drives the process of employment, but the decision makers are usually not in the HR seat. So there's usually a hiring manager who's using the HR function to find candidates and to manage the process. It is very important for you to build relationships with the hiring managers. They may be the PI, it could be anybody who's in a decision-making role, but you also don't want to make the HR people mad. A lot of the networking I do to grow my business is not as much with the HR people, but I cannot ignore them because they're still the gatekeepers. So you've actually got to have a dual-pronged approach. For you, you still need to spend more time building your relationship, making your connections with the decision makers, but you've got to pay attention and be nice to the HR people. Does that make sense?
But how? I mean, how would I know who's the hiring manager?
Well, the people you'll see at events like this are typically not going to be the HR people. They're going to be the people who are making decisions. For example, you've got the people here from TriStar who are in the venture capital world. They are great connectors if you don't want to go into pure research. But if you want to go into a business venture, maybe somebody's going to license a technology, maybe they're going to do something like that, you want to talk to the people with money because the money people are the ones who are always looking for talent to help businesses start up. I think they'll tell you this, that if somebody is in a position to fund two companies, they would rather fund the company that has decent technology and great leadership versus the company that has great technology and so-so or unproven leadership. So you want to get to know the people who are making the funding decisions. That could be angel investors, it could be VC firms. So you want to get to know them. You also want to get to know people. Joel Rolwing used to be the head of the TVA. Kim Petrie with Brett. You want to get involved with other people. Anyone here know what the Nashville Capital Network is? The Nashville Capital Network is an angel funding source in this area. There's a lot going on in the entrepreneurism area in Nashville. Nashville has a new entrepreneurism center. All of those are places where you can go out and make connections at events that they're going to have that will help you move ahead or get connected if you're looking for that opportunity. Questions? You mentioned HR. What was another, somebody asked just a bit about how to be found. Have I helped you in that area? Are there any questions? Yes.
A few weeks ago, I think Newsweek came out saying that they polled people who hire and that looks, attractiveness was found to be surprisingly high on their list of priorities of what interviewers
I've seen research before that talks about that. I think it depends. Now, if I were going to hire somebody in business development, I would probably be prone to hire a tall, athletic-looking person and not somebody who was not. I've had a case in point where we worked with a client, and a lot of the candidates that we provide to our clients, we don't ever see because our work is done over the phone. But we had a candidate who could not physically tour the facility because of his physical condition. I don't mean he had a disability. I mean he was not physically able. So I think, you know, all of us have challenges we have to deal with. I mean, there's a myriad of laws. For some people, that may be the case. I would encourage you to not have yourself stand out in a negative way. So I'm not going to say that people who are skinny get hired or people who are tall get hired. In some cases, that's going to happen. All I can tell you is that if you have the appropriate experience and background, if your paperwork looks right, and if you can communicate clearly and coherently, that's usually going to be enough. But none of you are probably going to interview for a, you know, you're not looking for a fashion job. None of you want to walk the runway. But, you know, human nature does sometimes come into play. There's also research that says that people sometimes like to hire people who are like them. So, you know, I know what my tendencies are. I try not to let my preferences overrun my ability to make a good decision. Did I answer your question?
Yeah.
I feel like I politically sidestepped a lot because it does happen. I can't say it doesn't. But I think the other side of it is if an organization hires someone purely based on their looks and not on their ability to deliver, is that really who you want to work with anyway? Other questions?
I guess this is just practical. What are some of your biggest turnoffs as a recruiter or missteps that people take consistently that just, I don't want to say it's automatically a black mark against you?
As a candidate, there are two things you can do that can really hurt you. One would be to say too much, and one would be to say not to say enough. And the balance of that comes from actually having some practice. I mean, nobody wants to practice interviewing. I mean, even I sometimes just want to kind of gag myself. But candidates who don't listen and candidates who just don't respond, I mean, if I'm talking to somebody and I'm trying to engage them in conversation and I can't get more than a yes-no answer, that's going to be an immediate red flag for me. Also, somebody who you never want to talk poorly about another organization or about another individual. You may have worked with someone or worked for someone. They could have been the biggest liar, cheat, whatever. You need to really stay away from making value judgments in an interview situation. Because even if you worked for an organization and things were not right, you know, you need to put the best possible face on it. And, you know, people do lose their jobs, especially in this economy. I have a lot of friends who are out of work. And, you know, there is no shame in losing your job. Other questions?
I mean, I understand why not to do it to somebody you're interviewing with.
Right.
Why would that even come up? But
I guess the other point is probably until the last 2 years, a number of people probably never had a gap in employment ever on their resume. So we're in a little bit different employment situation right now than we ever have been. If you are actively seeking work, and I think this will fill the gap in what I was kind of here from here to here, even if you're not able to find full-time employment, find a way to be engaged, and then you can still use that on your resume. So say, for example, maybe you'd worked in research, or maybe you worked for a contract research organization. Say you're out of work for 6 months. find something to do during that six-month period that would show people you were still trying to make a difference, even if you were not gainfully employed during that period of time. Even if it's not related to your background, anything is better than nothing. One last question. So who's going to get on LinkedIn this afternoon? It'll help.
Thank you very much.